We're in Genesis chapter 40 this evening, carrying on looking at the life of Joseph. And maybe you come from one of those families where nothing is ever wasted. Every scrap of food gets reused. I remember eating Bubble and Squeak regularly. I remember having a friend whose dad would just wait till the end of dinner time and just start hoovering up whatever was left on anyone's plates, because I think he just couldn't bear to see anything wasted. Some people are like that, aren't they? Can't see any food go to waste. Well, nothing is wasted in Joseph's life either. There's no experience, no event that happens that is pointless in his life. Nothing where he has to go through it just for the sake of it. No moment where God is thinking, well, I don't really have anything to do with Joseph now, so I'll just kill a bit of time in his life until the next big thing happens that I want him to do. There's some TV programs where you watch them and you get to the end and you think to yourself, do you know what, they could have cut that bit in the middle out, couldn't they? And the storyline wouldn't have suffered at all. That's not the case in Joseph's life, and it's not the case in ours either. Now, last week we left Joseph at the end of chapter 39, imprisoned. He's been imprisoned once before in a pit and then taken into slavery, and he's lived as a slave for years. But this isn't just a repeat experience to him. There are lessons God is teaching him, things he's preparing him for in the future. And in particular, we'll look next week at chapter 41, where he has a rapid rise to the very top and he stands in front of Pharaoh the king. In chapter 40, Joseph's being prepared for that. So I'm going to give you three lessons that God is teaching Joseph in this chapter. Here's the first one. God is teaching Joseph not to be bitter. And sometimes that can be a hard lesson to learn. Sometimes it takes this sort of experience where the temptation to bitterness is great before we learn that through difficult times. Joseph isn't the only high-ranking person to be in this prison. Remember, he'd reached quite a high status in Potiphar's house. But we're told in verses 1 and 2 that the king's butler and baker are there as well. Now, these aren't menial, lowly positions. You might think a butler, or you might have a cupbearer in your translation. Well, is his job just to pour wine and then hold the king's glass for him? No, these were privileged positions with political influence, where you'd get to advise the king on important matters. It's probably true of both the butler and the baker, that they're both respected individuals. But they're there in verse 1 because they offended the king. And it literally says they sinned against Pharaoh. I think we're going to see a contrast here as we bear in mind Joseph. They're there because they sinned against the king. Joseph is in prison because he refused to sin against God. Joseph's the one in this story who can rightfully say, there is no reason I should be in this prison. He's been treated unfairly. I'm sure you've been treated unfairly in life. You don't have to live very long to experience being treated unfairly. How do we naturally want to react? So we're trying to put ourselves in Joseph's shoes. What do we normally want to do when we're treated unfairly? Sometimes we want to get revenge. Whether we'd actually go and do something ourselves, maybe not, but you might help. You kind of think to yourself, oh, I'd like to see them get a taste of their own medicine. Imagine scenarios where something happens to them and think, well, she had it coming to her. He got what he deserved. Sometimes we want everyone to know how we've been treated. Someone was telling me recently how she bumped into her friend's sister, and the sister immediately starts talking about the friend, saying, oh, you don't know what she's really like. You think she's nice. This sister just came all out with it straight away. We want people to know, I've been hard done by other people. Sometimes we react just by going into a sulk. You stew over what's been done for you. You go from hour to hour moping around the house. People try and get you to cheer up and go, no, I'm not having it. It's another way of saying, I want people to know someone's done something wrong to me and I don't deserve it. Various ways we react wrongly to being treated unfairly. We become bitter. And it's possible to hold on to bitterness for a long time. There are families I can think of where there's been bitterness for 30, 40 years. People still recalling what somebody said in 1970-something. And it's still there. There's still anger and there's still pain in those families because of it. Joseph is human, and he would have been tempted to react in a bitter way. The way that we get tempted to react when unfair things happen to us. And if he'd have done that, it would have been wrong. And it would have been sinful for him. But from what we can see, at least, there's no evidence that that happens with Joseph. Because when you look at what happens, bear in mind, back in chapter 39, verse 23, the keeper of the prison gives Joseph great responsibility. He entrusts Joseph. Now, he wouldn't do that to someone who's wandering around prison, moping, doing the bare minimum. He wouldn't trust Joseph at all if he was like that. And then into chapter 40 and verse 4, he charges Joseph with the butler and the baker, responsibilities for him. And then when you look on in how he conducts himself with these two fellow prisoners, you get a little insight there into how Joseph is behaving. Because when these two have dreams, Joseph goes in verse 6, he goes in the morning, he sees them, he sees that they're sad, and in verse 7 he says to them, why do you look so sad today? Joseph's interested in other people. And you know, one of the first things we do when we become bitter and we feel we've been treated harshly is we start to look in at ourselves. And we don't care about other people so much. And even if someone else says they're feeling sad, our response is often, you think you're sad, let me tell you a story. And we turn it back to ourselves. Joseph doesn't do that here. He's asking them why they're sad. And when they tell them about their dream, he doesn't say, you think you've had dreams? I've had a dream too, and I'm still waiting for it to come to pass. No, he's interested. He doesn't just say, your situation isn't as bad as mine. You've just got a dream you can't understand. I shouldn't even be here. You two should be. You deserve it. You offended the king. You did something wrong. Joseph's not doing all the things that we would probably naturally incline towards. Let's not assume that all this is easy for him, though. Every bone in his body would have been crying out, this isn't fair. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't even be in this country. Except I was sold into slavery. And here I am. I'm in prison with other people who deserve to be here, and I'm the one meant to be showing sympathy and care to them, helping them out with their dreams. How do you respond when you're treated unfairly? You want the whole world to know? You sulk and moan? Ephesians 4 tells us, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamour and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. If you search your heart this evening, you can see some of that bitterness and resentment. It's a calling there for us to repent and to turn from it. Being bitter is never okay. I know someone's treated you unfairly. People have treated me unfairly too. Everyone's been treated unfairly by other people. But God calls us to repent from that response. We can still choose how we respond when other people wrong us. Jesus is a great picture for us here as well. Joseph has been treated unfairly. Jesus was too, but look at how he responds. I'm sure also that Joseph was a sinner. Let's not forget that. He's not perfect. And just because it doesn't tell us how he sinned in this chapter, let's not pretend he was sinless. But he is here to point us towards someone who, when he was treated unfairly, really was never bitter, never was sinfully angry, never shouted out in anger and sinned against God, never drew attention to himself on the cross saying, "Hey guys, these two around here, they deserve to be here, but me? No, come on." No, even then, he's praying for his enemies. He's praying for the people, caring for those who die next to him on the cross. Well, God's teaching Joseph not to be bitter by putting him in a situation where he could feel that he was justified. He could say to God, "Why have you done this?" But that's not how we're to respond. Secondly, God is teaching Joseph not to rely on human resources, or children, you could just write, not to rely on people, on other people. Verse 8, the butler and the baker tell Joseph their dreams. And their great sadness is they say, "There's no one to interpret my dream for me." Dreams were significant to the Egyptians. They placed great stock on their dreams and having specialists who would be able to open their books and consult and look at all the symbols and work out what your dream meant for you. But of course, because these two are in prison, they don't have access to those people anymore. That doesn't bother Joseph, though. His response is very simple. Don't interpretations belong to God? Now, maybe tonight you'll have a dream. You almost certainly will, though I suppose there's a decent chance you won't remember it. Sometimes our dreams can be very vivid, very real, very frightening. And you're going to have gone to bed tonight thinking perhaps a bit about dreams because we've just had a sermon about dreams. What do you make of those vivid, real dreams when you get up in the morning? Well, I wouldn't say God is speaking to you directly through those dreams. Joseph had that back in chapter 37. Don't get up and say to yourself, "Well, it must be God telling me something. What must it be?" And you know what? Because some of our dreams are just rubbish, aren't they? They're complete nonsense, and we tell other people, and they just look at you as if, "Why are you telling me that? It's ridiculous." There is a place, there is a value in dreams, though. It's this. The things in our dreams are often the things in our minds. Sometimes you're dreaming about something because that's what you're worried about. So it's not God directly speaking to you, but it is a cause for you to think, "I'm worried about that, aren't I? I need to commit that to God before I go about my day." Sometimes the things you dream about make you realise and point out to you sinful things that are going on in your mind. It shows you, "Yeah, that is in my head, isn't it? That's why I dreamed about such and such, and I need to repent of that sin." Sometimes the dream will point you towards a sin you hadn't realised was there. Dreams are of value, even when it's not God directly speaking to us in that way. Well, the two men tell Joseph their dreams, and God is going to be able to explain to Joseph, and then Joseph will say to them what it actually means. In verse 9 onwards, the cupbearer, the butler, has a good dream. He sees the vine with three branches, and it produces grapes, and he squeezes the grapes into Pharaoh's cup. And Joseph says, "Look, 3 days' time, you'll be back serving Pharaoh in his courts again." It says in verse 12 that he will lift up, verse 13, "Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place." But then the baker has a dream as well from verse 16 onwards, and the outcome for him is a bad one, that birds are going to come and eat the bread out of the basket of bread. And there's a play on words in verse 19. Again, "Pharaoh will lift off your head," this time, "from you." He won't be restoring you. He'll literally be taking your head off your body. Pharaoh's going to end your life, he says to the baker. Well, in verses 20 to 22, that's exactly what happens. It happens, verse 22, as Joseph had interpreted to them. One thing this is giving Joseph, by the way, is confidence for the future. Because in the next chapter, we'll see how Joseph is summoned to stand in front of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and interpret his dream. Well, here, Joseph has seen God is with him. God is able to prophesy through Joseph to tell him what the future holds. Joseph's learning, these so-called Egyptian experts, they don't know what they're talking about. There's only one person to rely on for Joseph here, and that's God. But I'm sure Joseph knew that already, didn't he? Didn't Joseph know that God's the only person you can really trust and he'll see him through? Hasn't he learned that already? I was talking to a friend recently who is going through a difficult time. And that friend said to me, I've already learned that I need to trust God. Why is God doing this again now? Haven't I learned that lesson? And I understand completely where that friend is coming from. I think Joseph could have said the same thing. And the answer has to be that, yes, we know it already, but there are greater depths of reliance we can go to. There's greater trust and faith and obedience. In other words, you don't just learn, oh, now I know how to rely on God, and that's it for life. God keeps on helping us pursue greater depths of holiness in life. Well, back in verse 14, Joseph has asked the butler to remember him. Remember me to Pharaoh. Tell him about me when you get out of prison. So when that happens and the butler gets out of prison, Joseph must be thinking to himself, great. All I've got to do now is sit back and wait. But he waits and he waits and he waits. Children, have you ever had a day? I hope this has never happened to you. Ever happened that mum or dad forgot to pick you up from school? All the other children went out, go running over to mum or dad or whoever it is picking you up. And as all then go home, you're the only one left and the teacher says to you, come back inside and wait in the office for a while. And sometimes mums and dads forget. They forget to come and pick you up. Well, here the cupbearer, the butler, forgets about Joseph. He's so excited, he's out, he's back in his old job, he's with Pharaoh, he's working, and he forgets. And in chapter 41, verse 1, you can see that Joseph is going to be there another 2 years until Pharaoh has his dream and something changes. 2 years, Joseph's going to have to wait now. But again, he's learning a very valuable lesson in that time that's going to equip him, which is that he can't rely on other people. I expect part of him was going to rely on this butler. Part of him in his head was thinking, he's a good egg. He'll see me through. He'll remember at some point. Maybe he's just waiting for the right moment to speak to Pharaoh. He won't forget me. And then he's let down by this man he'd helped out of prison. Sometimes the reason God lets people let us down in life is to impress upon us even more deeply that we need him, that he's ultimately the only one we can rely on. The butler isn't going to be Joseph's rescuer. Only God can do that. Thirdly, finally, God is teaching Joseph to be patient in this chapter. I mentioned it a moment ago. Back in chapter 37, Joseph has had his own dreams, and he's still waiting for them to come to pass. His dreams about how other people will come and bow down to him, his own brothers, his own family. Those dreams came to him 11 years ago, but they've not been fulfilled yet. Here he is in prison, and yet the butler's dreams only take 3 days, and he's back serving Pharaoh. That's not fair, is it? Why does God help the butler out of prison first? Joseph's been waiting 11 years. Yeah, God's preparing Joseph in the art of learning patience here. We can all be impatient, won't we? See it in children. I want my pudding now. I want to go to my friend's house now. We're not really any different, are we? I want to go on holiday now. I wanted to get to Friday night. I want to get to the weekend now. There's nothing wrong with looking forward to something. But often, our impatience is wrong because we think that the thing we're waiting for is going to bring us happiness. We think that's going to cure us, going to make us happy. Sometimes we get impatient because we want to know the future. We can't wait for the next episode of that TV series we're watching because we want to know how it ends. We want to know what the future is for this. For Joseph, I expect he would have wanted to know as well. At least, how long am I going to be here for? We can just flick over into chapter 41 and see he's going to be there for 2 years. He doesn't know that. Maybe he's going to be there the rest of his life. He just doesn't know. Sometimes we think, if only I knew what the future held, I could plan for it. It's the not knowing that's so hard. But sometimes God puts us in situations where we don't and we can't know the future to remind us we've got to trust God with it. We can't control it. I'm sure Joseph felt forgotten, discarded, probably quite useless. There he was, after all, busy serving in Potiphar's household, doing all sorts of fabulous things. Been learning and growing and being increasingly valued and useful. But now, God seems to have just tossed him to one side. You can just wait there a while, Joseph. And I'm not going to tell you how long. But God's timing is perfect, and he doesn't forget his people. Doesn't discard them. That ever reaches a point where he just sort of tosses people aside. Well, I've squeezed all the life out of them now. They've got nothing to offer me now. God works on his timetable in Joseph's life, not on ours. In the meantime, though, Joseph is faced with the fact that there's nothing he can do apart from wait on God. For Joseph, it means enduring the pain, the physical pain, the emotional suffering of prison, the injustice of it all that he just can't escape from. For us, there are all sorts of endurances as well. Whether it's enduring a boring job, day after day, that same boring routine, looking after the same people, having the same conversations. There are times when we've got the humdrum of life, like Joseph would have had for those 2 years in prison. I expect Joseph's prayers in that prison cell must have been very repetitive. I know how my prayers would go if I was him. Every day I think I'd pray, Lord, remind the cupbearer, tell the butler, give him a nudge, get him to go to speak to Pharaoh, please. I think I'd probably get up and pray that same prayer every day if I was Joseph. And every day I'd go to bed thinking, okay, not today. I'll pray again tomorrow. That's okay with God. To pray the same thing again and again and again. To come back to God and say, Lord, I know I've asked you for this before, but I'm asking you again now. Be persistent in our praying. See, our years of waiting, our time when we feel forgotten, it can send us in one of two ways. It can either make us feel bitter and make us complain and turn us into grumbling people, or like Joseph, it can deepen and mature our character. That's what happens with Joseph. He matures, and you see then as he carries on through life. And I think this is what enables him then, when he does rise to the top, to not abuse his position, to not seek revenge on Potiphar or his wife or the butler who just forgot about him or even his brothers, because he's matured. Well, Joseph has to wait in that prison. He doesn't know how long for. But he does have something to sustain him. And we'll finish with this. He's had those dreams. God's told him he's going to be a ruler. His brothers are going to come and bow down to him. God has spoken to him. Joseph's been given an insight into the future. He doesn't know the details. He doesn't know how or when. But he does know that God has spoken and God keeps his promises. That's what he's going to have to hold on to here. God has spoken to me. That's what we can hold on to as well. We can hold on to the promises God gives us in the Bible. See, we don't need to know the future. We just need to know the one who owns the future. And if you forget everything else that we've talked about tonight, that's the sentence I'd encourage you to keep with you in your mind. We don't need to know the future. We just need to know the one who owns the future. That's what will sustain us. That's what will stop us being bitter. That's what will stop us relying on other people instead of God. God has spoken. He keeps his promises. He never wastes anything. So I'm going to wait upon him and trust him. Well, let's close by singing, shall we?